Hello and welcome in to episode 9 of the No Shows Sportscast. I am Trevor Kuss and I'm joined once again by Mark Ling. Mark, how's it going?
Doing well, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm ready to get this going. A lot of baseball to talk about in this week's episode.
I like baseball.
Who doesn't? Anyone who does should leave America. Who doesn't should leave America.
What if they're already outside of America? Then what should they do?
They should come here.
They should come here to learn. Yeah.
Or Japan, I suppose. Anyway, a little too early in the episode to completely digress.
Never too early.
Before we get to the baseball, there's been some interesting NFL moves today. We're recording, as we usually do, on a Sunday, and the Cleveland Browns making themselves heard, at least in the off season thus far, making a pair of moves. One of which is with the Denver Broncos, and the other one is with your Oakland Raiders, Mark.
Yeah, the Raiders, whenever they make a move, I automatically assume is a bad one. I've been conditioned to think that way. So
it's a fairly safe assumption, I would say.
Right.
Although, this one, you know, after you look at it a little bit, the Raiders get outside linebacker kind of – he's like a – slash type, I think is what they call it. A linebacker, defensive end kind of guy, a pass rusher. Cameron Wimbley, a former first-round pick. I believe he was even 12th overall a few years ago.
Maybe 14th-ish in that range.
Top 15. And they get him for only a third-round pick in this spring's upcoming draft.
Yeah. When I saw that, I don't keep track of the NFL as closely as I do baseball, and I especially don't keep track of the Browns as closely as I do other teams.
Who does, really?
The dog pound.
Yeah, see, you don't even know the name of their fans.
It took me just a minute. So when I saw this move, I just assumed it was a bad one. I assumed that Wimbley was like Gerard Warren, and he was just this terrible. I knew he was kind of young. I just assumed that he had been bad. But I looked and I read into it, and he is not bad. He didn't have that bad of a season last year.
Led the Browns in sacks. The reason that the Browns are doing this is Mike Holmgren trying to kind of make his team the way he wants it to be. And they also have a pretty good amount of depth at outside linebacker. So they can trade away Wimbley for an extra pick, get another defensive player or whatever kind of part they need or feel that they need. And, the Raiders kind of stepped in. There were apparently multiple teams that were in on this trying to get Wimbley. And the Raiders, you know, for once, at least, right afterwards, it looks like they made a pretty good move.
Yeah. I have a little trepidation with this just because I've been burned by the Raiders so many times in the past. And Holmgren just got to Seattle. So maybe he just didn't like Wimbley and shipped him off for whatever he could get. I don't know if Holmgren's that kind of guy. He seems like a smart guy, so I don't know if he'd do something like that. But at the same time, he kind of knows his football. So yeah. He might see something in Wimbley that he doesn't like. But then again, on the fourth, he's not a part of their system. He couldn't work. So there's so many different things that
exactly.
Could be going on here. I'm going to give the Raiders the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to make myself vulnerable to them again. I've been doing it my entire life. Why not? Why stop now?
Yeah, exactly. Another move that the Browns made today, Brady Quinn shipped off finally. So the era of Brady, at least in Cleveland, has come to an end. And for Brady Quinn, the Broncos ship back to Cleveland Peyton Hillis, a kind of hybrid running back fullback, as well as a 2011 sixth-round pick and a conditional pick in the 2012 draft, also rumored to be a late-round pick, probably somewhere between 5 and 7.
Yeah, this move kind of makes me feel better about the Raiders' move because it kind of shows that they're cleaning house, getting rid of the guys. Holmgren might just be getting rid of the guys he doesn't
exactly,
like.
Exactly, yeah.
So I hope that's what it is. I think the Broncos got a pretty good deal here. Quinn is a change of scenery should help him, and Josh McDaniels as his mentor should help him. I don't know if it'll help him more than having Mike Holmgren as your mentor, the Peyton Hillis is okay. He was fine
he was
in Denver.
He was fairly
He's
good
versatile.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
This past season, McDaniels didn't really seem to, trust him with the rock. was much more of a fullback, which in Cleveland, that spot is taken up by Lawrence Vickers. He's
The immortal
the
Lawrence
immortal
Vickers.
Lawrence Vickers, has the lead blocking duty, so that's going to free up Hillis as possibly a goal line option to pair with Jerome Harrison.
Which is possible. Harrison's kind of a shiftier guy.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, as we were saying, Hillis fairly good 2 years ago. He had a nice streak of a couple games when all the Broncos running backs were going down. Before he himself got hurt.
Right.
But the interesting thing is that a year ago at this time, when the Broncos were trying to ship out Jay Cutler, the Browns had the opportunity of acquiring Jay Cutler for Brady Quinn.
Was it straight up?
I'm pretty sure it was fairly straight
I
up.
don't remember that rumor. I assume this came up now because Brady was traded and that's where he got this from. So I believe whoever reported that. On the surface, that looks like a terrible idea by the Browns, although it has been, it's two different regimes, so you can't really like
I
you
mean,
can't blame them.
yeah,
I'm sure if
exactly.
Holmgren had been there last year, he would have pulled the trigger. I don't know how what he feels about Cutler, but I've heard people that really, really dislike Cutler because for his immaturity, but I've also heard people that really, really like Cutler for his physicality, like
Yeah,
his
he's got the
athleticism.
big arm.
He's got the big arm. He can play football when he wants to. The question is just whether or not he wants to.
Exactly.
Some people say that he was bad last year because they had a terrible offensive line, which they did. So if they get a better offensive line,
Maybe
then
some better receiving options. I mean,
yeah, they have mostly burners at the wide receiver
yeah.
positions. So they maybe get a possession guy or three, and they'll be okay.
Although now they have Mike Martz, who doesn't use tight ends in the receiving game. So,
Right.
anyway, we don't need to talk about the Bears at this point. One last bit of NFL news before we move on to the plethora of baseball news we have. LT signs with the Jets.
Right.
2 year contract, $5 million and change for the 2 years. About 500,000 in incentives, I think.
Remember that. So I think they did this obviously because they lost Thomas Jones. LT at this point of his career is kind of similar to Thomas Jones in that he can catch the ball out of the backfield, but he's better suited as sort of a bigger guy to use on the goal line. Because he has a nose for the end zone. So they have Sean Green and they have Leon Washington still. So if they bring in LT, he could get 8 to 10 touches a game and be effective as long as it's short yardage
So the
situations.
question is, do you think Sean Green is still top dog in New York?
Yes, I think Sean Green is top dog in New York, unless the Jets are stupid, which they might be. But I actually like the acquisitions they're making. They're kind of raiding the Chargers. Cromartie and LT.
I think that this is a good sign for LT. It's interesting that he didn't want to sign with Minnesota since he had visited there earlier in the week.
I think the reason that didn't want to sign with Minnesota was clear, and that was because he had 0% chance of being the number one back. In New York, he has a chance because Sean Green is relatively unproven. So is Leon Washington. Leon Washington, most people think he can't be a feature back. So LT might think that he has a better chance to be a feature back in New York, where the reality is he probably has no chance to be a feature back anywhere. But if he went to Minnesota, he would definitely be the number two.
Yeah, and some people were bringing up that maybe this just shows that LT doesn't think Favre's going to be back. Because if the Vikings minus Favre, I mean, they were not a very good team 2 years ago. I mean, they were all right, but Favre put them over the top. The Jets were already a fairly good team this last year with, Mark Sanchez, who's going to be there for many years. And they're only really improving at this point with Rex Ryan kind of continuing to shape his team the way he wants it.
I feel like that could be the case if he chose the Raiders over the Vikings, but he chose the Jets, who, as you said, were a playoff team last year and have improved their defense so far this year. They improved their league best defense and their league best secondary. I don't know if that's true, but they had Darrell Revis. He was the best guy. They've improved their team and they were a playoff team last year. So I think the matter of whether or not Brett Favre's coming back sort of was irrelevant to his decision. I think it was. He seems like the kind of guy that wants to play equally as much, if not more, than his desire to win. So I think he wants to win a championship, and Minnesota might have given him a better chance to do that, but he also has a good chance to do that in New York.
All right. And now moving on to we've kind of got a like I was saying, a plethora of spring training updates and news in the baseball world. And starting it off, a rumor that's only broke a few hours ago. You hadn't actually heard of it when you arrived here at No Show Studio. That is,
Me, that is. I
yeah,
had
that
not
Mark
heard
had
of it.
not actually heard it. You listeners hopefully have heard it by now.
I've heard it since then.
If not, you're about to hear it. Ryan Howard for Albert Pujols is out there in the rumor mill of baseball. Now, on the surface, this doesn't seem to make any sense for the Cardinals, really. This would be an amazing get for the Phillies, if they were able to just trade Howard straight up for Pujols. I mean, Pujols is the best hitter in the league right now. I don't think anyone would argue with that.
He's the best player in the league right now.
Yes.
He's a Gold Glove caliber first baseman. He is the best hitter. He does it all. He even stole his like 17 bases last year or something like that. He does everything. So, like, you're right. As if they were to trade Pujols for Howard straight up, it would be a win for the Phillies. With that said, this deal's not going to happen. The
No, this is
Cardinals
yeah,
are
this
not going to trade Pujols straight up for anybody
yeah.
because he's the best player. If they trade him, which they won't, they would have to get multiple players, Ryan Howard, and then really good guys with Ryan Howard.
Yeah, the one thing that actually shocked me about this is I always forget how old Ryan Howard is. He's actually older than Albert Pujols. He's only been in the league for a couple of years. He's already 30. And you know how the argument for the Cardinals to make this deal is that Howard is a St. Louis native. That's always nice when you have, a hometown kid on the major league roster. He is, I think, more expensive than Albert for the next 2 years, but and both their contracts run out at the same time. He would be much easier to re-sign for the Cardinals. So if the Cardinals, for some reason, thought there's no chance that they re-sign Pujols, who's thrown out the idea of a 10-year, $270 million contract like A-Rod got a few years ago. So that's kind of the thinking behind those that think the Cardinals should make this deal. Now, that being said, I think Keith Law put it best on Twitter just a little while ago, where he said, "Yeah, I'd trade Pujols for Howard and Utley." Like it talent-wise makes no sense for the Cardinals, who have a pretty darn good team in the making at this point. They're gonna be, if not at the top of the standings in the National League, very close to it.
Yeah, the reason for this trade, if the Cardinals were to do it, would obviously be financial because Pujols is going to be, he could be the most expensive player in the league.
There's a very good chance of that, yeah.
So if they wanted to save money or if they didn't think they could re-sign Pujols, then this deal isn't a terrible one for them, I guess. They could get more.
Yeah, you would think
As weird
that.
as it is to say, getting Ryan Howard is nice. He's going to hit around 50 home runs, give or take five every year, which is really great, but he's not Albert Pujols.
Exactly. And I think, like you've been saying, that if this trade was going to happen, you would think there would be a lot more involved in the package returning to St. Louis. The Phillies don't necessarily have any sort of farm system to speak of aside from Dominic Brown at this point, after their Roy Halladay trade and all the offseason moves they've made. So I really think that this is just one of those, someone mentioned it in passing and it kind of just grew throughout the day. And at a certain point you have to acknowledge it, but it's just, this isn't gonna happen.
Nope, not gonna happen. Next
All
topic.
right, moving on, a little more serious of a note. We like to keep things light and breezy here at No Show Sports.
Was Trevor's nickname in high school.
Kinda
Light and breezy.
lucked into that one. But Ryan Westmoreland, uber prospect for the Red Sox, yesterday it was found out that he has a cavernous malformation in his brain, and that's going to require surgery. Now, I have, done my best to try to find a really simple explanation for what that actually is. And basically, it's something, there's some sort of problem with a group of cells in his brain that could lead to bleeding and possibly a stroke or seizure. So it itself isn't going to do anything, but it could cause a very serious, possibly fatal injury in the future.
Yeah, when I saw the words cavernous malformation, I immediately thought big ass problem.
Yeah,
That
if
it's
you don't know
not.
what it means at all, it's obviously got to be
Yeah,
bad.
it's those words scare me. I've never heard them before now, and I've watched every episode of Scrubs, so if this were a common ailment, I would have heard of it by now. And it's a serious thing. He's gonna have brain surgery, which there's never a safe and sound and okay way to have brain surgery. The last I saw, no one knows when he's gonna be able to compete again.
Yeah, there's no,
There's no timetable for his return.
there's no. I mean, at this point, when you have an injury like that, baseball's kind of on the back burner for probably quite a while.
Yeah, the Red
We
Sox have had experience with this. When we first talked about this, you're like, "What the hell is up with the Red Sox? What are they
bad
feeding their
luck, yeah.
players?" Because they had John Lester, who came down with a form of cancer, and same with Anthony Rizzo.
I believe they both had Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah, so there's that. They have a history of dealing with serious injuries or ailments in the Red Sox organization, so they'll treat this the best that any organization could. And Ryan Westmoreland's getting the best treatment in the world, and if it's possible for him to recover from this in a timely fashion, the Red Sox are going to find a way to do it. Just no one knows.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it kind of puts baseball into a reality check where, it is just a game. This kid has to get himself healthy so he can actually have a nice long life. Baseball should be the last thing on Ryan Westmoreland's mind for quite a while.
I'm fairly positive he's already a millionaire. I'm sure they gave him a pretty hefty signing
He
bonus,
was a
and
sixth round pick, but I
they
believe he
probably gave
signed
him,
for first roundish
yeah,
money.
they gave him in, I'm sure they gave him in the neighborhood of $1 million. So he has a lot of money, and he's going to get all this medical treatment for free. The Red Sox are
Yeah.
going to cover the bill. So it's not a terrible situation, but it's certainly not an ideal one.
And all scouting reports for Westmoreland have kind of pegged him as a very head on his shoulder kind of guy, a very, hard worker, amazing talent, but just beyond that, I think that, if for some reason baseball isn't in his future, he should still remain, he's not going to be a complete mess up where we hear about him going to jail in a couple years.
Yes, we like our players to have their head on their shoulders.
Anyway, that's my preference at least. Now moving on to some actually baseball related injuries instead of just like serious Uber injuries. There have been actually a lot of them so far, some of which happening even before spring training, some of which happening over the last week or so. Brandon Webb of the Arizona Diamondbacks has been working his way back from injury, is hit a couple of snags with that, and it isn't looking like he's going to be ready for opening day.
Yeah, so he missed most of last season, obviously, with an injury, and that has sort of hurt his stock both in the major leagues and in fantasy. If he is hurt, and if he is going to miss a significant amount of time, he's going to get the label of injury prone, and it's going to ruin whatever he had left of his career.
But really, for the Diamondbacks, this is a pretty big deal because their rotation wasn't looking that good in the first place. They had Herron Webb, Edwin Jackson, Ian Kennedy, and Billy Buckner signed up or slated in for the starting rotation. And now, if you have to move Jackson, Kennedy, and Buckner up, then you're working into the Brian Augustine territory for fifth starter, where even in the NL, that just looks awful.
Right, they had dreams of winning the NL West before this, and I don't know how serious the Brandon Webb injury is. I don't know if we've heard
We
yet.
still haven't really heard exactly what the problem is. He's just hit some snags in his rehab movement.
Right, so this could be nothing. He could be fine. That's from what it sounds like, and if hopefully that's the case. If not, look for them. They could make a move to get a decent veteran fifth starter. So in fact, they would probably do that rather than go with one of their terrible, unproven guys.
Yeah. All right. And now moving or staying in the NL West, I should say, Russ Martin of the LA Dodgers recently hurt his underbits, I suppose is a way to word it.
Interesting. That is a way to word it.
I believe he tore a groin muscle
That sucks.
for possibly up to 8 weeks. It's really tough because he came in to camp with a lot more muscle put on, looking to he had kind of lost a lot of the power that he had at the plate, and he was looking to rebound this year. He had really been an awful hitter, honestly, for the Dodgers. Still a very good defensive catcher, and it really puts a damper early on in the Dodgers' hopes in the NL West. So two NL West teams so far kind of getting hit pretty hard. They have Brad Ausmus, and I don't even know who their other catcher is going to be at this point. They're going to have two guys splitting time behind the plate until Martin returns, and one of which is Brad Ausmus, which is just never good when you have to rely upon him. At this point, at least, he used to be a fairly decent catcher, but he's well past his prime at this point.
Right. I don't think this really hurts their chances because they made the playoffs last year and Russell Martin was terrible. So if they are without Russell Martin this year, there's no reason that they can't make the playoffs. I think they are going to be fine. Obviously, they're not going to have a great catcher, but very few teams do. So while losing Russell Martin hurts, it's not going to kill him.
Yeah, and hopefully, he's not going to have too long term of a problem with this, at least for the Dodgers' sake. If he does come back healthy, he should still be able to be fairly productive. Hopefully, this is just going to drive home the fact to Joe Torre that he cannot be playing Russell Martin 150 something games a season.
Right, that's probably not going to happen this year.
Yeah. Staying once again in the NL West, just updating a injury that's been around for quite a while at this point. Freddy Sanchez of the San Francisco Giants still not on track to be ready even close to opening day at this point,
Right.
which is unfortunate when the team signed him to a 2-year, I believe, $12 million contract during the offseason.
Yeah, he's still in the Giants, right?
Yes.
So Juan Uribe is probably gonna get some playing time out of this, which sucks for
Big
the
playing
Giants.
time, yes.
Yeah, so that's bad. He's more just of an average hitter, right? Anyways, he wasn't gonna be like that great of a player
He
for
had
the
a bit
Giants,
of a
anyways.
resurgence with the Giants last season. But I would imagine that the Giants would not want to rely upon him for another year.
Right. The next big injury was Joe Nathan, who's most likely going to miss the season. Sucks for the Twins. They don't have an immediate replacement. They have guys like John Roush, Jose Mijares, Matt Gurriere. The one that I said that I thought of immediately after this happened, and I've since seen rumors, is Francisco Liriano.
Yeah, we're gonna be covering this a little more in part two as far as the fantasy aspects go of it. But yeah, really tough for the Twins, kind of looking to have a very good year moving into their new park. And anyway, sucks for the Twins. Moving on, one last injury. Desmond Jennings of the Tampa Bay Rays was looking at an outside shot of starting in the right field position for the Rays. Hurt his wrist, gonna be starting the year in AAA at this point. Unfortunate for those looking for some cheap speed, maybe late in the draft. Should still be not a problem. The Rays have Matt Joyce and a couple other options in right field. They should be fine. Now, moving on, we are gonna jump to the news that the 2010 promotional campaign for the San Diego Padres was released yesterday, and surprisingly, their two best players are not anywhere to be found.
Yeah, I heard this on the internet, and people are taking this as a almost certain sign that the Padres are not expecting to have Adrian Gonzalez and Heath Bell for the entire season, which makes
Yes.
sense. Why would you? The explanation that Adrian Gonzalez gave was that they wanted to give some publicity to the young guys, but one of those young guys is like 87-year-old David Eckstein,
Yeah,
who exactly.
what?
So.
Now, I mean, Kyle Blanks, Chase Headley, Everett Cabrera, that makes some sense. That's kind of the young face of your franchise at this point. But David Eckstein and Clayton Richard, who has been getting Richard has been getting blown up in spring training. He's looking at not even making the rotation at this point, and he's got a bobblehead night coming up this season, so that'll be fun.
Right, so that we were almost certain that those guys were going to get moved anyways. I think the more likely scenario is that Adrian Gonzalez moves, if I had to choose one, him or Bell, because they could get way more for him.
Yeah.
So, and I think if a team were going to be trading for Heath Bell, they would most likely be trading for him to be a setup guy, unless you're like a team like the Twins who loses a big time closer who needs a boost.
I think that Bell has the talent to even on a contending team be a closer, but that is kind of the recent history shows that when a reliever gets traded mid-season, he doesn't get traded and given a closing job. Like George Sherrill from the Orioles to the Dodgers last season, he was a closer, traded to the Dodgers, was setting up John Broxton.
Right. So Heath Bell, I think if I had choose one to stay, I would choose him, but I think they probably are going to both end up moving.
Yeah, I think Adrian Gonzalez at this point is it, we're just waiting on, when and not if at this point. All right, moving on to our last bit of ES or spring training news. Nomar Garciaparra retires. He signed a one-day contract and retired as part of the Red Sox organization. Now, I kind of bring this up more as a general point of talking and not just about Nomar, but this has kind of become a thing at this point in baseball and the wide world of sports. But Frank Thomas did this earlier this offseason, signing a one-day contract with the White Sox to retire. Now Nomar does it. And I kind of wanted to get your opinion, Mark, on is this anything more than a glorified, hyped-up news conference?
I think that it is more than that, and it's not really like a fad that's been happening over like recently. It's happened pretty consistently over history when a great player retires. I remember Joe Montana did it, Jerry Rice did it, Tim Brown did it. It's sort of a common thing that really great players have done throughout my lifetime. I don't know, it probably didn't happen back in the day because players stayed with teams their entire careers,
Yeah, I
but
mean, free agency has only been a part of sports for
right.
so long.
Yeah. I don't think Jordan signed with he retired too many times to
Who, I,
so
yeah,
yeah,
he
we don't need
retired
to
with the Bulls a couple times,
we
I'm
don't need to
sure.
use him as an example. I'm almost sure Scottie Pippen resigned for a day with the Bulls. So it's a pretty common thing. I don't think it's more than it might not be more than a news conference. It might just be publicity for the team. They give a couple $1,000, whatever, to the player to say, hey, retire with us and we can, sell a couple more of your jerseys or whatever. I don't know why they do it, but it means a lot to fans. It means a lot as a Red Sox fan. I feel, I'm a fan of Nomar's. I want him to do well. So if I saw him retire as like a Cub or something, I would be bothered a little bit by it,
That would be
but it's really
hilarious.
not that big of a deal. Like he, if he, when he in when slash if he ever goes in the Hall of Fame, and that's kind of debatable. I'm not sure if he will or not. He would go as a Red Sox, so that's not even debating because his the most he would be going in because of his time spent in Boston.
Yeah, that was actually, I was thinking about this yesterday, and that's kind of the thing I take from it is that the team is wanting to cement their position as the hat that will show up on the player when they go into the Hall of Fame if they do,
Right.
especially with like Frank Thomas, I think will end up in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's without looking too far into the numbers. He just was such a dominant hitter for so
And that's
long with the
assuming,
White
of
Sox,
course, he never tests positive.
which is very likely given the era and whatnot. But assuming no steroids and that. I think he will end up in the Hall of Fame, assuming no steroids. So that's really what I think it is that the teams want to set themselves up in case they do end up in the Hall of Fame. Just, because, I mean, when Nomar left, I'm sure there was some bad blood when he got traded to the Cubs. I'm sure Frank Thomas felt some bad blood when he was, forced, I believe he went to the Blue Jays first after leaving the White Sox. And then the Oakland A's. So, yeah, I mean, it is just kind of a weird phenomenon. It has been happening for, a while, but it just seems weird to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think players have been doing it forever, and whether it's for the money or whether it's for publicity, it's nostalgia and it's a good enough reason.
All right, now we're gonna jump to our list of three and Today we did have kind of a random assortment of stuff we were talking about, but we're gonna stick with our last story for our list of three, and it's gonna be the three. I'm gonna limit it to baseball players, okay? I don't think I told you that beforehand before we started recording, but the three baseball players that you most associate with one team.
Right.
Now this is re obviously spurred because Nomar could easily be up there on the list. Frank Thomas and the White Sox. But these are guys that definitely spent some at least decent years on other teams as well.
Right.
Now, do you want to start off or should I?
Go for it.
I'm gonna start off and my number one player,
Number one, or you're the first one
no,
you're
or
saying?
first player, number three, is gonna be Cal Ripken Jr.
All right.
And that's merely because, he spent all that time without taking a day off for the Orioles in an era that the Orioles really, at near the end of that streak, the Orioles weren't very good.
Right.
And yet he kept going out there day after day, made the switch to third base eventually. And he's one of the best players in that generation, and
He's one of the
spent
best players ever.
ever, yeah, and spent the entire time on one team.
Right.
So I think, Cal Ripken, that I can still remember, he actually broke Lou Gehrig's record. He broke Lou Gehrig's record on my birthday.
Interesting.
So I can remember on my birthday watching ESPN baseball and seeing the ceremony and them dropping the numbers on the warehouse in right field. And so maybe it's just a nostalgic thing for me, but I'm going with Cal Ripken Jr. for my number three.
Okay, fair enough. He's a good choice. For my third, for one, I'm not gonna order him. For one of them, I'm gonna say Ted Williams. Being a Red Sox fan, he is Mr. Red Sox. He spent most of his career with them. I'm not
Now,
sure.
real quick, randomly, while I was reading about Albert Pujols and Ryan Howard earlier today, I heard a old rumor that apparently it was once discussed that there was going to be a possible trade of Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio.
That would have been a
Yeah,
blockbuster.
and that was that's just that you just reminded me of that, bringing up Ted Williams.
Anyways, he was the last player to hit 400. Probably never gonna happen again. He was one of the greatest hitters ever, and he spent. I'm not confident in saying that he spent his entire career at the Red Sox. It's possible he could have gone with another team at the end, but
Spent a couple years in the U.S. Air Force instead of the Red Sox.
that's America's team, Trevor.
Yeah.
We're all in America's team. So he spent the majority, if not the entirety of his career on the Red Sox, and he's my choice.
All right. And for my second person, I'm going to go with another fairly recent guy, Tony Gwynn of the San Diego Padres.
Yep. He's
Now,
not one of the first guys I think of.
really?
Nope.
See, I think of it because the Padres were never, I mean, they had a couple good years, but for a long part of Tony Gwynn's career, were not very good. He had multiple opportunities to leave town, go to a much better team, cash in, they call it. And he didn't. He stuck with his team the whole time. He retired. Now his son is on the team. He coaches baseball for San Diego State, I believe. And it just it's I mean, it just is. That's someone I think of. This is fairly subjective, obviously, but
Right, in the eye of the beholder.
yeah, Tony Gwynn is definitely up there.
Yep, so the next one I'm going to say is Jeets.
Yeah,
Derek
I
Jeter.
was thinking about him.
Derek Jeter, he, Mr. Yankee. Enough said.
Yeah, we don't really need to talk about it. I would have picked him if not for my hatred of the Yankees.
Yeah, I really dislike the Yankees, but I have no beef with Derek Jeter or Mariano Rivera. I've said that many times. Those guys are cool. They have killed the Red Sox in the past. Whatever. Players do that sometimes. I don't like the Yankees. I don't like George Steinbrenner. I don't like his sons. I don't like some Yankees players like Jorge Posada. I have no problem with Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera.
All right, and my last one is going to be a Yankee, unfortunately, but it's going to be a really old Yankee, and that's Babe Ruth.
Is a terrible one.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, he spent some time on the Red Sox.
Some time. He spent the first half of his career on the Red
Okay,
Sox.
okay.
He's
But
known because he was on both the Red Sox and the Yankees, and he went from the Red Sox to the
the
Yankees.
Yankees stadium that was just demolished, but the Yankees old stadium was known as the house that Ruth built.
So
He built an entire stadium.
if it were stadiums that remind you of players, then I would agree that Babe Ruth would be a good choice. But this is not the question. The question is, players remember to be associated with one team.
Biased,
I'm obviously a
biased.
Red Sox fan, so I see this in a different with rose-colored glasses. But I think most people who know anything about baseball know that Babe Ruth was a great as a Red
Most
Sox
people that
player
know a
and.
lot about baseball know that.
No.
I would say the casual generic fan might know that he spent some time on the Red Sox, but I don't think they would realize how good he was on the Red
So
Sox.
if this is a player you most associate with one team, then that's fine. I'm
Yeah,
just telling
it's
you I
just who
don't
I
agree.
so you don't agree, but I'm mainly saying that because there was an entire stadium for the team that up until now was still around. And that was known as the house that he built because of how important he was for that franchise.
Right. So my last one is going to be one of the best baseball players of all time. Do you know who it is?
I don't.
Barry Lamar Bonds.
Oh no! Why do you have to do that?
Because he is, in my mind, and always will be, a giant.
Pittsburgh Pirate.
No, giant. So that's my third choice.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. He definitely, he did the most part. Most of his damage was done offensively with the Giants. That was because, he wasn't juicing when he was in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's gonna do it for part one. We'll be back in a minute for part two. As always, our music is brought to us by the Music Alley from Mevio. We have not picked up the music yet again, but it's gonna be awesome. So we will be back after this. This is part two of episode 9 of the No Shows Sportscast, the fantasy sports section. And before we get into, we have a couple extended pick a players as well as a very interesting in-depth player. But before we get into that, some news that we want to cover the fantasy aspects of. A couple of days ago, it was brought to light that although they were thought to have been over the Verducci, guidelines, I suppose, is what we can call it. Trevor Cahill and Brett Anderson have not pitched or increased their innings that much. They were thought to have jumped 55 and 4 or 54 and 1/3 respectively, but it is now been found out that nobody counted the 08 Olympic innings they pitched.
Right, those count. Oh,
Yes.
eight Olympic.
08 Olympics. So it was thought that last year they increased 55 and 54 and a third, respectively, from the year before.
Right.
So they were thought to have been at risk for this upcoming year, but they are not. And it makes a lot of sense that they're not because Billy Beane has historically been very cautious with young pitching and kind of, put a lot of power in numbers like that. And you would think that he would be watching. When it's been proven to work fairly often, or been proven right fairly often, so yeah, they it should be interesting. Brett Anderson has been getting a lot of hype this offseason in the fantasy realm for the upcoming year. What are your thoughts on him, Mark?
Yeah, hype is hype. I've been subjected to hype a billion times in the past, and it's bitten me in the ass most recently with the Daisuke Matsuzaka. So hype is nice. It's gonna bite me in the ass again. I'm sure of it with Jason Hayward. That's just how it is with me. Brett Anderson's good. He's a good pitcher. He has good control and he has velocity and all that fun stuff. But
Yeah, people are saying potential ace in the makings with, I mean, he had always had the command and the secondary offerings, and now recently with his added velocity, there isn't really much not to love about him.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who have ace potential, so he's one of many.
He's already had a very good, at least parts of last year, put up a lot of really good numbers. Anyway, and then Trevor Cahill, not so much. He going into last year was thought of at least on the same level, if not better. And yeah, he's definitely fallen behind, and it should be interesting to see if he can actually win the fifth starter's spot. Him and Gio Gonzalez are two. Gio Gonzalez is a much more failed prospect at this point, but Trevor Cahill, on his way towards there at
I
least.
feel like it has to go to Cahill over the other guy.
Well, so far, Gio Gonzalez has pitched much better in the spring than Cahill.
That's irrelevant. The A's know
Anyway, moving on
that.
now, we're gonna talk a little more in depth about possible replacements for Joe Nathan. We were talking last part about his injury and the implications towards the AL Central. And now, what are you were talking about Francisco Liriano. You wanna run us through the other options, Mark?
Yeah, there's John Roush, Matt Gurriere, I don't know how to say that, Pat Neshek, and Jose Mijares are their bullpen arms. I don't think it's going to be Neshek. He's kind of a submarine type guy. He's not really a closer type.
Also coming off of Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, that's relevant. John Roush has closing experience, so people say he could be the guy. The two guys I like are Jose Mijares and Francisco Liriano. I feel like they have the best stuff. Mijares would just came up last year, and so he's not really as proven as the other guys, so they might not give him the chance. But Liriano is coming off injury, and he's not doing as well as some people would. He didn't do as well last year as some people would have liked. So I feel like at some point in the season, they're going to go to Liriano as the closer.
Yeah, I think John Roush is going to open up as the closer, unless they really, commit to Liriano. I'm not sure that they're going to move him, partway through the season. So I think if he starts the year in the rotation, unless he really is struggling there, I think he's going to stay there. So it is interesting outside of the box thinking. Hopefully, I mean, I think it might work, would probably work out the best for the Twins, with Francisco Liriano there. They have a lot of other depth at starting pitcher, but I think that, given conventional thinking, John Roush is probably going to be the closer to start the year. He's closed in the past, he has the stuff. I think he will put up decent numbers. But I mean, they have a lot of really good arms in the bullpen, so it could be fantasy kryptonite for some owners, trying to pick out who's going to get the saves. I mean, it could honestly be any of those five guys, among others.
Yeah, the problem with this is that the Twins don't even know who their closer is at this point. So we're guessing, we're all shooting, stabbing in the dark, and it's a gambling game. And make your pick and go, stick with it.
All right, now we're going to move on to our pick a player section. We have four set up today, and they're all extended pick a players. It's going to be a pool of players, and instead of just one or the other. So, starting us off in the outfield, Colby Rasmus, and a couple of guys who are normally ranked, at least in a lot of minds, ranked ahead of Rasmus going into this year for 1 year leagues. Connor Jackson, Chase Headley, Juan Rivera, and Mark DeRosa.
Yes, those guys are all considered safer than Colby Rasmus because they've had a good year in the past and they're more of a veteran presence. When I play fantasy baseball, I normally go with upside guys. So if I had to choose between a guy like Colby Rasmus and Connor Jackson, I would go with Colby Rasmus every day of the week. Because Colby Rasmus is going to start every day. He's going to be hitting in front of Albert Pujols and Matt Holliday. And he was once a top prospect. He was ranked behind David Price and Matt Wieters as the third best prospect in all of baseball a couple years ago. So he has talent. He has legitimate speed, power. He has the upside of Grady Sizemore when Grady Sizemore was in his prime, or when Grady Sizemore wasn't hurt.
Yeah, when I see Connor Jackson ranked above Colby Rasmus, I just don't get it at that point. Connor Jackson missed all of last year with either Valley Fever or Scarlet Fever, something that
Just
sounds like a
made up.
mid like
Yeah.
a
Sounds like an
old
Oregon
West.
Trail
Yeah,
disease.
exactly, like dysentery or something. So I starting right off the bat, Connor Jackson is out of this group for me.
Yeah.
I would put Connor Jackson last in this group.
Okay.
Like, he has the upside, but until he gets back on the field and is actually producing, I don't want anything to do with him.
Alrighty.
And Chase Headley, decent numbers, kind of pulled back some by Petco. He's going to finally be playing his natural third base position after the trade of Kevin Kuzman off to the Oakland A's this offseason. So I think we could see some decent numbers from Headley, and the dual eligibility will be nice in fantasy leagues, but I would still take Rasmus over Headley. Juan Rivera is a nice safe pick, and like you were saying, you can play it safe or you can play for the upside. I would take Rasmus over Rivera. And now Mark DeRosa, I'm biased because he's a Giant now. I would still take Rasmus over DeRosa. So I think that these guys who are conventionally ranked ahead of Rasmus, I would take Rasmus over all four of them.
Right.
All right, now we're gonna move to a starting pitcher group of players. They're all ranked within, 10 or 20 spots overall out of players, so really tight rankings as far as starting pitchers go.
According to ESPN.
According to ESPN, according to yes, ESPN. Edwin Jackson, we're starting off with. And then Joe
So
Blanton.
we can try. I'm doing this on the fly, but we can try doing it one by one. So we can do like Edwin Jackson and Joe Blanton. Who do you want? And I'm sure both of us are going to say Edwin Jackson, right?
Yeah, nobody likes Joe Blanton.
Yeah. So then we go to the next guy, John Sanchez. How would we like them in between the two or above of Edwin Jackson?
I would take John Sanchez over Edwin Jackson.
John Sanchez over Edwin Jackson. I would take Edwin Jackson over John Sanchez.
Close, though.
It's close. John Sanchez has more upside, but he needs to stop walking a billion people.
Yes.
So the next one's Rick Porcello. Where would you stick him?
I would take him above Jackson, below Sanchez.
Okay, I would take Rick Porcello. Again, this is going to the upside guy in me. I would take Rick Porcello over any of the people we've named so far. That's kind of.
In a 1 year league, I wouldn't. In a keeper league, obviously, I think Rick Porcello is the
Right.
highest. I don't think he's gonna get his strikeouts together this year, and that's gonna hold him back. He's gonna have decent wins on a okay Detroit Tigers team. He's gonna have a nice ERA and WHIP if everything works out all right for him. But I think that he's really gonna be the one weak point is gonna be strikeouts for Porcello, which
That's fair.
is fine because he's still a really young pitcher. I think he might be like 21 at this point.
Right. My thinking is that he's going to get, I feel like, although it's hard to predict, I feel like he's going to get more wins than Jonathan Sanchez. I
Probably.
feel like he's going to have a better ERA and a better WHIP than Jonathan Sanchez. The only thing that would be better for Sanchez is strikeouts, like you said. Porcello, that's his one weak point.
And
So,
I could see that being a huge difference
yeah.
if everything goes right for John
I feel
Sanchez.
yeah I that's fair, and I don't think that it could be any bigger than the difference between ERA and WHIP. This is similar to our Lincecum Halliday debate, so it's just preference, whatever you prefer. So the next one we have here is Wade Davis. He's another guy I really like, and in order of my preference, I think I like Wade Davis. I think he's on the Rays. Obviously, he's going to get a full-time starting rotation spot this year, most likely. And they're a winning team, and he's in a tough division, but I like Wade Davis.
Yeah, I think Wade Davis in a 1 year league, out of these young guys, could definitely perform the best. He's going to be facing some of the toughest competition, pitching against the Red Sox, the Yankees, and improved Blue Jays and Orioles offense as well. So he's going to have some tough outings, but I think he's proven himself at every level moving up the minor leagues. This is kind of something that the Rays like to do. So he's not a young kid anymore. I believe he's going to be 26 going into this year. If not, he's going to be very close to that. So I think that he could easily outperform everyone else on this list for this year. I would still take Porcello and maybe even Sanchez long term.
Right.
But th this is definitely going to be near the top of the list.
Yeah, the next guy we have on this list that Trevor put together is Matt Latos. I like Matt Latos. He has really high upside. He's kind of a knucklehead, which is his only downfall, but he is going to be pitching in Petco, and I think by the end of the year he'll be the ace in San Diego, which isn't saying a ton, but I think he has the potential to be the best on this list.
He has the home park advantage. Petco Park, where fly balls go to die.
Right.
So I don't necessarily like his talent as much compared to everyone else, but I think given that he'll be pitching half his games at Petco, you have to put him in this at least ballpark. Now he has some injury concerns coming off the last couple of years, so I would be cautious of him, but I think that he could be a very good late round pick for a starting pitcher.
Yeah, no, definitely. Latos is a high upside guy that if you want to take risks, you take him. The next guy we have is Brad Penny. Worst on the list. I think we can move on.
He doesn't really fit in. Him and Joe Blanton don't really fit in with the other guys, at least as they're not young guys with huge upside. The reason I put Penny in there is that he is ranked fairly close according to ESPN, and he's going to be working with Dave Duncan, who Dave Duncan has worked some miracles with some pitchers. Even Adam Wainwright wasn't that good. I mean, he was a top prospect, but he wasn't considered this good when they traded for him from the Braves. So I think that Brad Penny could be this year's Dave Duncan project that
Todd
puts
Wellemeyer.
Todd Wellemeyer, who's now taking Brad Penny's spot in the Giants rotation,
Also taking Madison Bumgarner's spot.
which is fine in my opinion. We can get to that at some other point, but I think that I probably wouldn't take Brad Penny over. Well, I would actually probably take Brad Penny over Joe Blanton in a 1 year league.
Yeah, I forgot about the Dave Duncan thing, and I like that, the pitching coach effect. So I'll take Penny over Blanton, but
Yeah, but I would
not any of
definitely
the
take the
others.
upside guys, everyone else, over Penny. Moving on, we've got some back of the draft catchers. If you're in a standard league, like a 10 to 12 team league, one catcher per team, these are going to be guys that you might be able to rotate through on the waiver wire. But so start so starting us off, Ryan Dumit. So decent catcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates, fairly injury prone. I believe he's had 6 DL trips in 5 seasons, I want to say.
Yeah, he's pretty injury prone. Most of the guys on this list we have are. I'm just going to run through them real quick if that's all right with you. We have Giovanni Soto, Benji Molina, Yadier Molina, AJ Pierzynski, and Chris Iannetta are the guys that we are going to rank. I think Dumit's toward the top of this list because of his upside. Obviously, the injury and the shitty team that he plays on are the biggest concerns. I would probably take. These guys aren't. I would probably take Soto last. I don't really like.
Really?
Yeah, I don't really like.
I would probably take Soto first out of this group.
I really think I would take Soto last. His down year last year, I don't like that very much. AJ Pierzynski is a pretty underrated catcher, as
Absolutely.
is Yadier Molina. I would probably take Benji Molina second to last because while he offers power, he's not going to get a ton of runs because he can't run, and he's not going to play a full season because the Giants have Buster Posey.
Yeah.
I'll take Chris Iannetta towards the top of this list. I think he's young and has good upside, and he's in a good park.
Yeah, I would take Soto at the top of the list. I think he's gonna have a bounce back year. He came into camp in amazing shape, which kind of sounds cliche, but he lost like 30 pounds over the offseason, which
Right.
is you wouldn't think that someone getting played or getting paid to play a game would have to, really find the motivation and would be able to lose that much weight.
Right.
But, whatever, we're at that point now. I would take Soto at the top of this list, then I would take Dumit. Benji is probably near the bottom, like you said. He's not going to get that many runs, and he's not going to play an entire year. Now, if you were just streaming these guys through the waiver wire and you don't need to rely on Benji for an entire year, I think he'll put up decent numbers while he's in.
Right.
I would put Yadier near the bottom just because he just doesn't do that much. He's usually the eighth hitter for the Cardinals. his value comes from defense, and that does not do anything for you in a fantasy league.
Truth.
So I would take Soto, Dumit, then probably Przinski, Iannetta, and then Benji and Yadier.
All
So
right.
Molina brothers at the bottom, in my opinion. They have offended my family. I will not stand for it.
All right.
Moving into our last group of players, it's kind of back of the draft yet again, this time in relief pitcher fashion. And for the most part, they're closers, except for the guy we're starting with, who is, I think, ranked behind all of these guys on ESPN, except I believe he's ranked ahead of Mike Gonzalez.
Right.
And the guy I'm talking about, of course, is Neftali Feliz, who, given his struggles in spring training early on, looks like he's slated for the bullpen at this point. I think both of us agree that he will be there long term anyway, but that he will probably be there even this year for the Texas Rangers. So Neftali Feliz and the rest of the guys are closers, or at least starting the year off as closers. The first is Matt Capps of the Washington Nationals. The next is Mike Gonzalez of the Baltimore Orioles, Leo Nunez of the Marlins, Kerry Wood of the Indians, Bobby Jenks, another guy who lost a bunch of weight this offseason, of the White Sox, and then Carlos Marmol of the Cubs, who is now given the closer job after Kevin Gregg left town.
Right. I think Marmol has pretty high upside. Obviously, not as high as of upside as Neftali Feliz, who's basically all upside. And he's going to be closing this year. So, the point here is that if you're looking in a shallower league for a relief pitcher, you want someone who's going to get saves, unless your league counts holds. So, if we're talking a standard league where you just get saves and it's a pretty shallow league, then you're not going to. Neftali Feliz has value because he'll strike out a lot and he'll have a good ERA and WHIP, but he's not going to get you very many saves, most likely.
I don't
Frank
think he'll
Francisco.
get really any
Right,
saves
Frank
or
Fran.
any, actual, reliable amount of saves. But I would still, I would probably take him over a handful of these guys. I'm not sure Matt Capps spends the entire year in Washington, and he's no better than a setup man anywhere else. And Neftali Feliz has way better stuff than Capps.
Right. I've not liked Neftali Feliz. We've gone over this many times because I feel like he's going to ultimately wind up in the bullpen. And if he were a closer, that would be spectacular, and he would definitely be over all these guys. But like I said, if you're in a deeper league and you count holds, then Neftali Feliz should be ahead of probably be ahead of these guys because he'll beat most of them out in strikeouts, WHIP, ERA, and he'll get a ton of holds as the setup guy in Texas. But if you just count saves, then if you have a relief pitcher, you get him for saves. You don't get him for ERA and WHIP and Ks. It's really nice to get those things, but you're kind of costing yourself a chance to get saves if you get a setup guy rather than a closer.
Well, I think there is a way to play. It's a tactic that you could use instead of having, I mean, if you're not competing in saves on your team, or you have a couple other guys who are, stud closers, I think Neftali Feliz could be an interesting play. You wouldn't, want to have him as one of your top relief pitchers, but if you could have, a Jon Broxton and some other, Brian Wilson maybe, or some other decent closer, and then have Neftali Feliz filling out the back of your fantasy bullpen. Back as in least valuable, not back as in the usual sense of closer. But I think if you have reliable saves from somewhere else, Neftali Feliz will be like a ha if he's a setup man for the entire year, he'll be half an ace. Like, he'll get you 70 to 80 innings of low ERA, low WHIP, high strikeouts.
He'll be half an ace, except for wins. He won't. He wouldn't.
He
Well, he's
probably
not
won't have
likely.
that. I mean, the wins are, as we've always said, completely unpredictable,
Right, but
especially in relief pitchers.
he would need to get around 10 to be half of an ace. So
At
yeah,
least,
the other categories,
yeah.
he'll be really good.
So, he if you're struggling with relief pitchers elsewhere, and you find yourself looking at Leo Nunez, who's fairly unproven still at this point, or Mike Gonzalez, or these guys who are kind of fairly shaky closers, Neftali Feliz, in my opinion, is a viable alternative.
Right.
All right, we're gonna move now to our last portion of the episode, our in-depth player look. And we didn't mention it earlier on, but he has been, quite impressive in spring training. And we're going to be talking about the recent Cuban defector, Aroldis Chapman, signed with the Cincinnati Reds, a 6-year, $30.25 million contract. And so a lot of money, at least for a completely unproven player at this point. He's a lefty. He throws ridiculous heat. He was clocked in the triple digits in the World Baseball Classic. And even in spring training now, people have been confirming that more and more. He has, for a lefty to throw 100 miles an hour, that's fairly ridiculous.
Yeah, he has pretty high upside, and that's evident because he's really young and he can throw really hard and he's left-handed, and that's great. The concern here in fantasy leagues is that he's probably not going to play much of the year this year. So if you're going to get him, you're going to be hopefully in a keeper league.
Yeah, in the keeper league, I think he's extremely valuable at this point.
He is extremely valuable. I'm not sure it's extremely likely that he's going to be good. Now, this depends largely on my belief that Dusty Baker's bad for young pitchers.
Well, yeah, I think that's
So
fairly proven at this point.
it's a distinct possibility that the Reds realize this at some point in their lives and fire Dusty Baker and hire an actual manager that won't mess up all their young pitchers like he did with the Cubs. It's also just as likely that the Reds are going to be stupid and keep Dusty Baker around for the next 10 years so he can ruin all their young pitchers. That is kind of a big factor in my head. So while Aroldis Chapman has really high upside, he has the potential to be one of the top five to three to the top pitcher in the entire league.
Yeah.
So it depends on how the Reds develop him. It depends on lots of things. Pitchers are pretty risky, but he definitely has upside.
Yeah, I mean, he throws the triple digit fastball, and then he actually can break off a slider in the range of 90 miles an hour. So this and we haven't actually mentioned this, but he's listed at 6'4" and he only weighs 180 pounds. So he's a stick.
Right.
And he's throwing Randy Johnson in his prime type stuff at this point. And now he doesn't have great control, and that's really been his issue as to, has been some talk that he'll end up as a closer, which would, greatly hamper his overall value because he would not be throwing nearly as many innings for his ball club. But I would think that he would be extremely, it's almost like Neftali Feliz, where they have both have amazing stuff, and if they end up in the closer role, that's, bad for their overall value, but they're still going to be dominant.
Yeah, if when they play, like Kerry Wood is pretty good whenever he pitches. He just doesn't pitch super often now because he got hurt and now he's in the bullpen. So they could be like that, where they could start for a year or two and be really good and then get hurt or something, or lose control of the zone and have to move to the pen. So there's endless amounts of possibilities with this guy, just like there is with Neftali Feliz and Steven Strasburg and all guys of this ilk. Like you said, the problem with Chapman is his control, and I think one of the problems is that he might run the risk of getting overworked when he gets to the big leagues.
Yeah, I
So
think Dusty Baker, as you were saying, is a huge question mark. I don't see how that guy's still in baseball at this point after he ruined Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor.
yeah, he could be a good, bullpen third base coach, whatever. Yeah, but he shouldn't be allowed to manage pitchers anymore. He's like an old guy who runs over 17 people in his car. You should take his driver's license away at some point.
It doesn't mean he's a horrible person. He
We,
just
I have
shouldn't
nothing
be
against
given the
Dusty Baker.
opportunity to do that damage again.
I know people that have had lunch with Dusty Baker. So I got no problem with the guy, but he should stop. They shouldn't let him around pitchers anymore. It's like a drug addict. You shouldn't let a drug addict around drugs. It's just how it is.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Aroldis Chapman, kind of unlimited potential at this point. We haven't mentioned this, but he's supposed age. It's always a question mark with international defectees, especially from Cuba, because there's so little information on him beforehand. But he's going to be playing at the age of 22 for the entire season, if his age is correct.
Right.
So he's extremely young still. I mean, chances are he should open the year in the minor leagues. I mean, he's not that, refined of a prospect. He is amazing stuff, but he should probably work some time in the minor leagues, get used to the American game, But I think that once he works his way up, he should be, I think that there's a good chance that he stays as a starter. I think there's a better chance he stays as a starter than Neftali Feliz sticks as a starter.
Fair enough. That could very well be. That might be because he's left-handed. I'm not sure what the difference is between the two. They're very similar pitchers. They just throw from opposite sides of the plate. So I like Aroldis Chapman. I'm just not super confident that he or Neftali Feliz will have more than a couple seasons as starters. So to me, that hampers their value.
Yeah, and I think that he's a big name and he might actually get drafted in some one-year leagues this year, but at least in a one-year league, I wouldn't be touching him because his starting point, at least now, at least at this point, we don't know if he's going to start in the majors or, if he'll be in the bullpen or if he'll start in double A or wherever. So I wouldn't be touching him in a one-year league at this point, but a keeper league, this guy is crazy valuable at this point.
Yep, he has super high upside, and that's the kind of guy I like.
All right, well, that is going to do it for us here at episode 9 of the No Shows Sportscast. Next week, we'll be back with episode 10, Mark. Big double
We
digit
can have a
movement
party?
for us. I think we're having a party.
That's the week before spring break. We can
Yeah,
have a
we're having a
party.
party.
Nice. We should have a party on the air.
All right,
We
well.
should do next week's podcast drunk.
We just might. We
It's
just
not
might.
professional, but who gives a shit?
Yeah. All right. Well, before we go, we should mention the email and the blog if you guys want to either vote yes or no for us doing next week's podcast drunk.
We
and
should have. Can we do polls on the blog?
I think we can, yeah.
No one's gonna vote in it, but we should do a
Yeah,
poll on the
we might
blog.
put it up. We might look for that. So our blog can be found at noshowssports.blogspot.com. And our email is noshowssports.gmail.com. There's two S's, no shows sports. We're thinking about possibly changing that just because we've had a couple people say that it's not the best name because of the too many S's. So if you want to drop us a line about that or anything
Yeah,
else.
email us about your ideas about our bad email. Don't tell
Yeah.
us in person. Email.
All right. Well, on that note, that's going to do it for us. We will be back next week, either sober or drunk. And yeah, everyone, we will see you in a week.